Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Oley Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Oley Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
All right, we're back again with Oley Insider. I am Jay Fratt, one of your hosts on this magical journey of diving into the legislative process to understand it better. I've got my co-host here, Erica Engelhart. She's as sweet as a little Debbie treat and as tough as a $2 dinner steak. What's up, Erica?
How are you doing, Jay?
I'm doing okay. Concerned, as I have been at the beginning of this process, is, man, it might be a little overwhelming to follow and track all of these bills. And holy cow, we're in the thick of it right now, aren't we?
We are, and it does seem a little bit messy. There's stuff going on here, stuff going on there, so it is a little bit wild, but it's definitely an adventure.
Yeah. And I hope that the people are enjoying us as the process as well, learning more about the legislative process so we can interact as citizens and make an impact. And we've already broke news. We've uncovered misinformation. This particular episode, we're going to get into the weeds and we're going to discuss a couple of the things that hit us very early on when we were diving into these bills. We've got statements from the state treasurer. We've got statements from this group called EFSEC, the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council. What we dove into was we immediately noticed that there were bills that requested by outside agency. Agency request bills is what it's called. And these are these bills that are produced by outside agencies. Basically, they find legislators to put them forward. And these are the bills that become law. The three of the bills that we're following use these outside agencies. In other words, Sexually Violent Predator Bill, HB 1133, that was brought forth by the Attorney General's office, and they were involved in the writing of that bill. EFSEC, this Energy Site Evaluation Council, they were behind a group of legislation that's in committee right now, and the bill that we're following, HB 1018. And then the state treasurer planted a bill within the late legislature. Let's see, what was that one? That was, do you remember that bill off the top of your head?
I just had it on the tip of my tongue.
I've got it right here. It's SB 5080, making financial education instruction a graduation requirement. And so Erica and I were thinking about that, and we're like, okay, what prompts these agencies? Who are these agencies? Just in uncovering that, I think that's when we learned about OPR, the Office of Program Research, this nonpartisan lawyers, group of nonpartisan lawyers that effectively write the legislation for our legislators and assist them in creating legislation that would fit within our laws.
Hey, Jay, so is it just government agencies that are requesting these bills, or is it outside agencies as well?
I think it's Washington State governmental agencies. I was curious about this EFSEC, and we have a great soundbite from a gentleman that works at EFSEC. He's head of their communications department, and I actually knew somebody in Olympia that worked for EFSEC, and it is a government agency, and so I think that's why they call it. I mean, people are out there slapping their foreheads right now at us because that's why it's called an agency request bill.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, we're just learning here, so.
That's right. There's, and boy, I tell you what, I talked with had a wonderful discussion today with Matt Marshall, who near the end of this particular show, we're going to play the clip from him, just in understanding the legislative process as the bills go through committee and what happens to them after they go through committee, because we have a couple bills that have reached the point where they've gone through public hearing, they've gone through executive session, and now they have a due pass. And I was like, okay, so what happens there? And I thought, why not ask a freshman legislator as he's learning and going along the process with us as well? And he didn't know, he was learning a lot about different things. Like, he didn't know that OPR existed also. So, you know, I think that the more we learn as citizens and the more people that we can drag along with this information, the more we're going to help as we try to help citizens interface with their government bureaucracy, essentially. But right now, let's get to, I keep talking about this FSEC. Let's get to my interview, the sound clips of the gentleman with FSEC. Again, he's in their communications department. His name's Carl Jalapa, and he's going to explain how FSEC interacts and what their part of this process is with HB 1018, adding fusion energy to facilities that may obtain site certification for the certification for the purposes of Chapter 80.50 RCW.
Great. Let's take a listen.
At the direction of the legislature in SHB 1924, FSEC and the Department of Health led an interagency work group in 2024 to identify and evaluate new and existing permitting, siting, licensing, and registration pathways for producing fusion energy. As directed, the work group involved the regulated community throughout the process. The resulting 15-page report established that the Energy Facility Site Locations Act, otherwise known as EFSLA, Chapter 80.50 RCW, currently does not distinguish between nuclear fusion and nuclear fission, and could be read to require a developer to only use the FSEC process to permit and site a fusion energy facility. There was a desire to delineate a regulatory process that would provide flexibility to the industry as each fusion company pursues its unique technological approach to production of energy. So given these conclusions, FSEC's agency requests legislation, otherwise known as ARL, is a narrowly defined bill attempting to distinguish between fusion and fission and provide fusion energy developers with the choice of a siting and permitting process that best suits their needs. So that could be FSEC, that could be Ecology's coordinated clean energy permit process, or a local government-led process. For example, you know, when things happen at Hanford, that tends to be on the federal level. There's also local governments on the county level that may fit into that equation as time goes on. While fusion involves lower safety and environmental risks than fission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or otherwise known as NRC, is still developing its regulatory framework for licensing and regulating fusion energy systems. As a result, FSEC has developed its ARL agency request legislation to ensure that it is not an obstacle to the development of the fusion energy industry within the state, but also that it does not get ahead of work being done at the federal level.
There you go. You're into the weeds now. You've heard from FSEC, the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council, and how they interfaced with the legislature to get these bills that adjust our laws to make it easier for these commercial operations to develop their cutting-edge technology. And of course, you can always go to ericburner.com and learn about the Red New Deal. The New Red Deal. Just search JFRAT New Red Deal, and I'm sure you'll find it. That's the work I did with presidential candidate from Washington State, Eric Berner, crazy smart man who is trying to bring a fusion energy policy forward for the Trump administration. But moving on to the next bill that was an agency request bill that we've got on our list that we were covering, and that is SB
5080.
That's it. SB 5080, making financial education instruction a graduation requirement. And that bill was requested, it's an outside agency request by the treasurer, the state treasurer's office, state treasurer Mike Pelliciotti. And we caught up with Mike to ask him why his agency sought this legislation.
Which is our proposed legislation to finally require that financial education be taught in our schools today. You know, I just have a foundational belief that basic financial knowledge is essential today in order to be able to navigate today's complex financial systems and just to create a pathway to long-term financial success. And my office has drafted this bill and requested that the legislature pass this legislation to finally make it so that financial education is required in our schools today, and also to set a graduation requirement for all Washington students to have some foundational training in financial education. And I'm really pleased about the feedback and partnership we've had with stakeholders in putting forward this legislation. We believe that ultimately it's going to lead to more student success.
So I did catch the hearing on this and listen to the different testifiers. What was interesting is most of the testifiers were in favor of the bill. There was only one that was in opposition to the bill. And then there was also some younger people that came in to testify from their high school, I believe. And I thought that this next comment was kind of interesting from one of the senators.
Yeah, I just so appreciate your testimony today. And I'm an old lady, and I had a degree in home ec, 2 degrees in home ec, and it used to be that home ec was the place where you learned about finance, you learned about housing, you learned about insurance, you learned about loans. And in 1991, we made a decision in our state to move vocational education into the higher ed space, out of the K-12 space. And what we're talking about today, I think, is a lot of those changes and the impact that we're seeing that it's had on our curricula, and thinking that we need to kind of come back and think about what it is that we potentially let go of and what it is that we need to bring back as we think about our life skills and what it takes for us to not only be successful learners, but also livers and successful in all of our endeavors. So just really appreciate your input today as young people, and we'll continue to hopefully move this thing forward. Thanks.
That was Senator Claire Wilson out of the 30th Legislative District speaking there.
And I found that part interesting. So I went back and I was trying to find where she said that in 1991 they removed the home ec from high schools. And I had a hard time. I even called you and asked if you could find anything about that. And what did you find, Jay?
Yeah, she was very specific, saying 1991. What I found is on the internet's home economics was not removed from Washington State high school curriculum, but it did decline in popularity and was rebranded as Family and Consumer Sciences in 1994. The explanation is that it declined in popularity, you know, social norms, home economics classes became less popular in the 70s and 80s. This was due to changing societal norms, budget constraints, and educational shifts. In 1994, the American Association of Family and Consumer Sciences changed the name of the field from home economics to Family and Consumer Sciences. This was done to more accurately reflect the profession and the complexity of the issues it addresses. FCS, Family and Consumer Sciences, now include topics such as nutrition, family finance, and, drumroll please, social justice issues. But I did, I'm with you. I thought that they moved home ec out of middle. Didn't you and I have a conversation and we remembered it in middle school?
That's when I remember taking home ec, was in middle school.
I myself as well, and I'm I don't recall my children ever having home ec or having that opportunity as they went through middle school and high school. And part of my research after you brought it up was I saw that it was moved to secondary education, so at the college level. And I believe I saw statements that like Wazoo, Washington State University, had all but dropped their, I don't know for a better word, home ec courses.
Well, that's quite interesting, Jay. So I did mention that there was one person that testified in opposition to the bill, and their argument was that the students are already not proficient in math in our state, and adding requirements for graduation essentially was useless if their basic math skills were lacking.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you're with me on this, that budgeting and home finance and just having the general tools to exist in our society and our complex monetary system, I think that that's good. And that can be a bridge to advanced mathematics. But I don't see any reason that this shouldn't be put forward. What do you think?
Well, I do agree with you. And some of the testifiers that were in support of the bill, they talked about student loans and navigating that whole aspect, which I can kind of relate to right now as my son is getting ready to apply for colleges and stuff. So I do think that, you know, he could have been a little bit more equipped for navigating this. You know, good thing he's not doing it by himself, but I couldn't imagine if somebody were trying to navigate all this by themselves without any kind of education on the matter.
Yeah, and that's pretty technical when you get into applying for college loans. I'm just thinking as simple as budgeting for home finance. You know,
balancing your checkbook.
That's right, balancing a checkbook, executing a simple budget with food and gas and how much you make and understanding things like discretionary income. I don't see any problem with that, and I think that that's necessary for our young people that may not have the advantages of coming from fantastic homes like yours and mine, but they need that. They need that education that maybe we shouldn't assume parents are giving that.
Especially when finances are kind of one of those topics that aren't talked about very much. You know, it's kind of a almost taboo. So I do think it's good for them to get it out in the open and talk about it a little bit more with the students.
Yeah, and to end the show, we get into the weeds. Erica and I have been diving in, trying to understand the legislative process. We're following these bills at this point, and they get into hearing in the committee, and then they go to the executive session. And then behind closed doors, although I did learn that these executive sessions are open to the public, supposedly. Eric and I are still tracking down that verification because we cannot find a video of an executive session. But the bills go to this executive session, then they get this due pass. I wanted to bring a freshman legislature along with us because he's learning about this process as this is his first year in the state legislature as a representative. So I caught up with Matt Marshall and asked him about the process. This is Matt Marshall, Republican from the 2nd Legislative District.
So in committees, first thing we do is we all submit bills, and they get the bills that are submitted by 10 a.m. will show up that afternoon, usually around 4 p.m. There will be an email that goes out to all the legislators, and it tells us the report of bills for the day. They get read into the record, the first read. There's a few places we can submit these bills. They all get collected up at 10 a.m. Those bills are then referred by the Speaker to the Speaker of the House to different committees. And then the committees go to the chairman of the committee, who determines on what bills are going to get scheduled for their hearing. So they end up on the agenda for the committees, and a hearing is scheduled. That's when people can start opening up and submitting public comment on bills, is once they're in committee, and specifically when there's a hearing. That's when people can start signing up. Sign-ups for the committees ends 1 hour before the hearing. So the nonpartisan staff will read the bill report, which is basically just the bullet points, the cliff notes of the bill. And the cliff notes of the bill are read. We can ask questions to the nonpartisan staff. And then the prime bill sponsor gets to speak. We can ask questions to the prime sponsor. And then we open up to public testimony. Depending on how controversial a bill is, determines on how much time is going to be allotted. I've seen some chairs in the committees will allow up to 3 minutes per person to speak when it's a non-controversial bill. Or sometimes they won't even time when it's just one or two. But when we've had one bill where we had over one of the gun bills, I think it was 1,000 or 1,500 people were signed in. And so first thing that happens is time gets limited to a minute or 30 seconds. And then they try to go back and forth on panels of three for in-person and then online panels of three. And it's three pro, three con, and then same thing online. And they go back and forth until time has been exhausted or the chair just calls it. After that, we'll go caucus right after the public hearings. And the caucus is where the Republicans go to one room, Democrats go to another. We just kind of discuss the bills and kind of where we're at on the bill. Are we going to be for it or against it? And we just have some notes. We'd also talk about any amendments we'd like to propose to bills. And we talk with our partisan staff that assist with that committee. And they communicate any amendments to the nonpartisan staff, and we get them drafted. A few days later, usually a 2 or 3 days and up to many weeks later, the chair determines what will go to executive session, which bills will go to executive session. And that's when we talk about the different amendments, and we discuss all the amendments, we read all the amendments, we debate all the amendments, and we vote on each amendment one at a time. Once all the amendments have been gone through and adopted or not, we get to the final bill or the final vote on the bill in committee. And that's when we actually do a roll call vote, typically, unless we've had a bunch, usually early in session like this, that are non-controversial. They don't have any burden on taxpayers. Both sides are in agreement that it's good for the people of Washington. And so we'll do a voice vote and we'll just all say yes or no. Once it passes committee, so at the end of the vote, it's either a yes or it's a no, do not pass, or no, and then there's some sort of suggestion. Or you can abstain in committees, which is not something that we do on the floor, but in committee we can abstain from a vote if we just really don't have an opinion either way, or if we have a personal conflict, we could abstain from a vote. But once it passes committee, it's reported out of committee. So we can see that on the bill trackers online, that something's reported out of committee. At that point, it goes back to the Speaker of the House as this bill has passed out of committee, and it's advanced to what's called the second reading on the floor, but only if it's pulled by the Speaker. So there's discretion on these bills, and the discretion is held in the Speaker of the House, and the chairs of the board have discretion on what moves and what doesn't. And so even if something passes out of committee, if there's a ton of controversy and it's likely going to have a long drawn out floor debate, the Speaker may hold on to that and intentionally not bring it forward. Right now, we're all allowed to speak 10 minutes. Every member of the House can speak 10 minutes on any motion or any bill on the floor. And when we get to a certain deadline later in session, we're running out of time, that gets shortened to 3 minutes. And so some of the more controversial bills will intentionally be held until the time is shortened, so we don't end up having, you know, multiple hours of discussion on the floor when we're strongly opposed or for something that the other side is strongly opposed to.
Fascinating to get a tutorial and explainer from one of the legislators, freshman legislator Matt Marshall. Really appreciate all of the legislators that give us their time to help us understand the process and bring that information to you. We've got a homework assignment. We're trying at Ole Insider. We're trying to get ahead of the game so we can alert you when there's one of the bills that we're tracking has action coming up. We have a homework assignment for you, and we are tracking HB 1113. It's concerning accountability and access to services for individuals charged with a misdemeanor. Davis, do you want to read me that bill summary?
HB 1113 authorizes the court to dismiss a defendant's misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor charge upon the defendant's substantial compliance with court-ordered conditions, subject to certain requirements and exceptions.
That is an interesting bill that we selected. In our society right now, Washington State is one of the highest crime rates in the country, and yet we're still finding ways to reform our system to make it easier for criminals to get back out onto the street. What I want you to do is you can go to Ole Insider, and I'll have the links there to the hearing date, which I believe is at 1:30 p.m. on February 3rd, Monday. Go read that bill. Take a look at it. Maybe you want to testify. Maybe you just want to watch the process. But we're going to be following it. We're going to be reporting on it next week. Come along with us. That's your homework assignment this week, to either go to the Washington State Legislature page and search 1113, HB1113, or go to oleinsider.com and follow the links there. Read the bill. Take a look at it. It's going to be in public hearing in committee at 1:30 on Monday.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good. Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.